Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 69, Reezy Resells, Michael Reezy. You know, it seems like I've had a lot of booksellers lately, and maybe that's true. You could almost think that there's a resurgence of book sales, and I think there's some truth to that, but I think it's more of the sellers are more technologically skilled. They're much more focused. They're much more intentional, much more organized about their business. And what I really love about this interview is this is a kid that has figured it out. Yes, he's a kid. Smart kid from California who has figured out how to work with someone else in a partnership, which is always a big deal, but how to scale up this business to where, you know, they're selling thousands of books. I mean, this is a pretty good sized seller who has figured out some processes. And I think that's what it comes down to is those processes. So in this segment, we're going to spend some time talking about his background. And what we didn't mention in his background is that he was a young dad who, you know, grew up pretty poor and really didn't have a lot. It comes out a little bit, but it's a deeper story than that. We really didn't spend that much time on it. Maybe we should have, but I just love the hustle on this guy. I mean, it's just, he has figured out that the secret to this business is real simple. Buy low, sell high, right? But you got to add hustle. That's what makes it work. You just can't buy a little bit and do that. You've got to add the hustle. And this guy has definitely figured out. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Man, this person and I have been trying to get together for a while, but both of us are insanely busy. My excuse is, you know, I got work, I got life and this and that. This dude's got kids. He's got a lot going on. Welcome, Michael Reezy. Welcome, Michael.
Hey, what's up, Steven?
Hey, your nickname is Reezy Resell, so I'm going to stick with that. I like that. Reezy. I like that name. You were mentioned Michael Ross. I don't know if you know Michael and Brittany Ross. Power couple sellers. He is so smart. She is so smart. He sells on Amazon, but he had started selling on eBay and antiques and stuff like that. And he just has a mind for it, and they evolved into Amazon. And he sent me a note one day. He's like, Steve, you got to interview Reezy Resells. This guy has the model I love. He said, I've been thinking about getting back into books every time he posts something. And then my wife's like, no, we're not getting back into it. But to impress Michael's a big deal because I think the world of him, and that is a big deal. So you really jumped out onto the scene in a big way, and you've really become very visible. Where you been hiding? You've been selling a long time, man.
I haven't been hiding. I have my personal Facebook, which is private,
which is smart, by the way. I mean, they just don't mix well.
Some people know. So I don't want to like post my pictures of my kids on everything and whatnot, and also want to retain a little bit of my privacy. And so, you know, you might know my other account, and I've been members of groups for a long time, and I've been helping people, but I could never accept people's friend requests, and I just finally decided to get into it and just say, hey, I'm already spending all this time helping everybody. Why don't I just put it all into one bucket, you know, and that way it's just on one place. Everyone can find it and just go with the flow.
Well, I've seen you everywhere. And I think I even saw you in a Steve Rakin video the other day. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Steve.
Yeah,
awesome.
I think I did see that. Yeah, he is a great guy. We hung out in Baltimore, Steve and I did, and I've interviewed him. I love the energy. Now, you're a young guy, but you've been selling a long time. So let's go back all the way back when you were a baby. Now, start off, you started selling in high school. Tell me about that.
Selling online in high school. As a youngster, I was selling all the time, just never had any money. I grew up really poor, so I would take recyclables from the apartment and push them 2 miles and cash them in and get some money, or get sodas and drag them in a wagon with ice and sell them to people for $1, like a grocery store soda brand or whatever. But when high school came, actually my little brother, he wasn't even in high school at the time. He's actually a computer programmer now, and he started getting into eBay, and he started selling basically almost everything in our house that wasn't bolted down that my mom would let him. And he kind of had an epiphany that fortunately he shared with me one day, and that was he sold his Nintendo 64 with he sold everything in one auction. And then he noticed that the guy that bought it, his name was something like Video Game Seller Guy, something like that. I don't really remember.
Right.
And so he started investigating what that guy sells. And lo and behold, this guy was selling a controller, a game, a power adapter, basically selling everything individually. And that's when we learned about breaking bulk. So then
– So he parted it out, right? So he got it, took it apart and said, hey, this is – and the sum – not the sum. Individually, they're worth a lot more money than I paid your brother.
Yeah, exactly, because
smart.
At the time I didn't realize it. I was just skateboarder in high school, and I wasn't, you know, I didn't figure out online sales yet, and I didn't know about breaking bulk. And so yeah, you know, someone who wants a controller is willing to pay $10 versus having to pay $40 for the whole thing, because what are they going to do with the games that they don't want and yada yada yada. So then we realized that was that guy's business model, buying lots on eBay and breaking them up. So we started doing that, and then we started going to yard sales and just buying stuff and breaking bulk on eBay.
Did you stay in a particular category? I mean, you're young guys, so I mean, obviously video games would have been pretty in your genre. What did you sell?
For the most part, video games at first, just because that's what I knew about. But anything. I'm really computer savvy. My dad was a computer programmer. My brother is a programmer now. So I've always had computers around me. So I always felt like I had a little bit of an advantage over other people as far as my ability to do research, basically my Google foo, ability to be able to use eBay and to say that, okay, why did this sell for that high price? That's the price I want mine to sell for. And so I would always just I would look stuff up. I would have my brother at home. I would call him on the phone. Hey, look this up for me real quick.
Is this a long time ago? I mean, so you didn't have – I mean, they didn't have an app, right?
Oh,
there was
no.
Nothing. You didn't have a phone that you could scan and all the barcodes and all the – and the Amazon scrapers weren't around. So you really had to – but if you had that ability, somebody who could look it up, and that, you had a real competitive advantage, right?
Oh, for sure. It was totally amazing. And just to get an idea of how old it was, the computer that my brother was using to look stuff up on was a Gateway computer.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure we were using dial-up internet, and we only had one phone line in the house, and my mom would always get mad when we were on the internet. She'd pick the phone up all the time and crash our internet. And we had that Pagoo internet answering machine so that when you would call us, it would forward to that, and then we would get a message while we were on the internet.
But you know, just case. Think about, you know, the foundation though that was established, you know, I mean, I think there's an advantage in some ways. Those of us who've been in the business, us old guys, right? Yeah, me and
yeah.
You, right? We're a little bit different in age. But those of us who've been selling a long time, there's a big competitive advantage because you have that foundation of you don't have to rely on the phone all the time, right? You can just, even with your eye, I'm sure, you've built up enough skill that you could just say, I can't check it here, bad signal, but I know this, I know this, I know this. I think that's an advantage.
Oh,
you agree?
Definitely. As far as books go, which is my expertise, I'm not really an expert at I'm not on a book collector status. I call those guys gray hairs because they go straight for the dustiest books and they seem to know which ones to grab. But my whole philosophy for books has always been, hey, I got a scanner and why am I going to try and outthink it? You know, if I have the time, I'll let it do the thinking. But as far as like bulk buys, you know, I know what I can pay for a truckload of books without even looking at them. Or and for other stuff, like the other day when I was with Steve Rakin in the green room out at a Goodwill, they all saw these roller skates in the box, but no one checked them out. And they were Riddell roller skates, and I just happen to know that those are like top-of-the-line leather roller skates. I know from working at the skate shop, actually. And So I paid $30 for them without even really looking at them after I opened them, and they're like brand new. And because I know they're $250 retail roller skates, and I'll have no problem selling them for like $100, you know.
And you still sell on eBay too. So what interests me is that, you know, your last profession before you became a full-time reseller was working in a skate shop in sales. So, I mean, a bunch of skills, right? So the computer stuff, obviously, you did well with the video games and stuff and selling that long ago. But then even working in the skate shop, you have a perspective that most people wouldn't. Well, look at it, your whole green room. They all walked right past it, never had a clue, yet you had built something way back in the past that you're able to apply today. I just think that most people have that. And they failed to draw back against it to sell what they know, right?
Yeah, it's serious. I spend a lot of time, not as much anymore because I'm focusing on growing my business, but I used to spend entire days just looking at eBay completed auctions, just searching certain terms, just searching certain seller stuff and just going, oh, my God, this guy's selling rubber stamps singly. Oh, my God, this guy's buying lots of G.I. Joe. And then using yojo.com website to break them apart into individual lots and put the weapons with them and selling them a single G.I. Joe.
Because you see that stuff, right? I mean, this is my theory on stuff, too. When I look at it and somebody's like, oh, check out this thing, I'm like always, I'll see that. I mean, I see everything. I used to do more. I don't really go out very much anymore, but I used to see everything. And my theory is you will see that stuff again. So I agree with you. I think that's a great investment of your time. Because how many things have you walked up and you're like, in the past you would have walked past, but now because you have that knowledge, you just, boom,
yeah,
slammed right on it.
I read a ton of books about business and stuff, but I really like these little short books that people write basically along the lines of things to sell on eBay, things I've sold on eBay, or whatever. I'll read the crap out of those. I'll watch Antique Roadshow. I'll watch American Pickers. Even though Storage Wars is fake, I'm still going to watch it. I might fast forward to the part where they do the evaluation, but I just want to see the item and hear what it's worth. You know, it's all about, have you seen it? Have you not? You know, one of the best finds, the best single item I've ever sold, My daughter Luna brings it up to me. Or actually, I think I'm being an old person. I think it was Alyssa when she was much younger. She brings it up to me, and we're at a yard sale. She paid, I think we paid like $6. It was a Blith doll, Blythe. And at the time, I didn't even know what it was. And it was in the box, but the box was all wet and wrinkly and just totally crapped out. But the doll just looked so creepy, and it was in the box. And my daughter wanted it, and the lady said $5 or $6, so we bought it. And I looked it up when we get home, and we sold it for $1,800 on eBay.
Oh my gosh!
and it was just something about it. It just looked so creepy to me, and it's really weird. It has these eyes where you pull the string on the back, and then the eyes and the head change 3 different colors.
So, what that eye that you get, right? So it's not that you knew that. That particular thing, but you knew it was unusual, right?
Exactly.
I always say that is a skill set that a lot of people have when you can recognize value, right? And so that is a great – I want to take a break because I want to transition into Amazon, but I think that skill – I want to talk about it right after the break because I think that is just so important to have. We'll take a quick break. We're right back. All right, it's early in 2016. You just came off a slamming fourth quarter 2015. You're sitting on a boatload of cash and you're thinking, I want to do something for my business. I want to grow. Start looking at end foundation. Look at them as building blocks. Build, build, build. Change your categories. Think about gated categories specifically, shoes and clothing. YourSourcedInventory.com, that's what they focus on. You'll get a list every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, and they're going to give you leads for about 10 items that are in the shoes and clothing, and even dipping into the sports and outdoor category, which is great. These are all gated categories. Listen to some of these ranks. In October, the average shoe rank was $7,571 for $29 profit, a return of investment of 88%. December, 11,000 ranking, profit of $32, 83% ROI. Think about that.
profit of $32. What's your average selling price? Imagine what your average selling price would jump to. In clothing, ranking in October, $6,800, profit of $1,488. But listen to this, ROI of 109%. What could you do to get that 109% return? You got to join YourSourcedInventory.com. We use it as foundational in our business. We think you should too. YourSourcedInventory.com. Told you it'd be a good interview. All right, so in this segment, we're going to get into the processes, his nitty-gritty on how they do their business. I love it. I love the thought put behind it. And I think the fact that they're thinking about touch points, they're thinking about pinch points, those things really are important for you to look at your own business. Even some pro tips come out. And I think there's a pretty good point about keeping track of your pro points. Don't take it for granted. You'll forget them. You get busy and then somebody new starts and you forget to tell them that. Jot yours down. Keep a little book for yourself. It's a great little tip to hold on to. So let's get back into the podcast.
All right, we're back and we're talking with Michael Reezy, a.k.a. Reezy Resells. And we're just before the break, we were talking about the ability to recognize value. And I think that you can translate that in a lot of different ways. Recognizing value in people, recognizing value in products, recognizing value in skills. And so what we were describing was when you're at a particular sale and you see something that's unusual, I've sold something dissimilar but still similarly unusual, you have advantage. How does that translate to your Amazon business now? Because you're selling, majority of your sales are on Amazon. How does that translate? I mean, does that just – are you knocking it out of the park because of it, do you feel?
I wouldn't say that skill translates so much for books, which is most of our Amazon model. With the basic gist of that is get more books.
Okay. So you're scanning more. Majority of your sales then are scanned books.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Mm. Okay. Well, I think, though, tell me if this is true. When you go to a book sale, you go to a particular place in the book sale pretty much all the time?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so there's that – because you know there's value there.
Right. Well, we have all kinds of strategies and procedures that we employ. Like when we go to a book sale, we go with a team. I'll hire people just for that day. We all wear the same color shirt, 50% because it helps us find each other and the other part because it's intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has an area that they go to, you know, so we're definitely not going to the fiction section first.
So are you using PDA scanners or phone scanners now?
Thankfully, we have finally transitioned to using all phones.
I'm dating myself. I was a PDA scanner way back, the old e-sailor tool.
Me too. I was actually using the Axum X5.
Yep.
And also using an old cell phone to do SMS lookups for LCCNs.
Wow, I haven't turned one on. I bet I still have a bunch of them laying around here. But the cool part then was you had the database, and so the answer was instant, right? I mean, it was truly instantaneous. You didn't worry about, you know, whether you can get a signal, because a lot of these sales are in basements and things like that, and a cell phone wouldn't work.
Right.
But today. You can actually download databases in your phone. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's awesome.
And so, is it as instantaneous using the the handheld scanner? Is it as instantaneous as it was on the old PDAs?
It definitely is. I can tell you, at first, when they first did it, it wasn't. I work really closely with a seller tool. We use the FBA scan made by a seller tool, and they take our suggestions really directly and implement a lot of them. And that was one of my first complaints. I was like, well, I love it, but I can't use it because it's not as fast. Because the PDA, you could scan 10 books, and even though the PDA hasn't caught up to your physical scanning, if you stop and stand there, it will catch up. And then if you have the audio alert on, say it dings because that was a book you want to get, like you're at a book sale. So then you could just back it up, scan the last 3, 4, or 5, ding, that book, then look at the screen, that's the one, throw it in the bag.
And you jump forward those other books because you already scanned them, so
right,
it was very efficient.
And they didn't alert you, but with the phones at first, I don't know why, I'm not a programmer, but it wasn't keeping the data like cached in a real coming to the thing. As it was processing the ones you were sending in and taking a second longer than it should, it was missing the ones that were in queue. But now it's perfect.
Now it's perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And the old PDAs used to work on DVDs, CDs. I even worked on some vinyl back then, and then toys. How about the new ones, Acellar Tool? Does it still have that large of a database, or is it really isolated down to books?
You can do books, and they have it separated books or everything else. So you just check, do you want books or everything else or both?
And – well, I'm going to drill down a little bit because this intrigues me. So when you – do you use that if you went into a retail store and not scanning books, or are you using one of the ScanPower Inventory Lab or Amazon's tool?
I would use that for sure. And then,
the FBA scan?
Yes, correct. They have a mode called live mode where it pulls live data also. And so as long as you get a good signal, that's great to use that. If I was – generally, when I buy anything, especially in large quantity, and I'm not sure about it, I would check it on the Amazon seller app to make sure that it's not restricted.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about that, because it does sound like you're doing some larger buying. Is that – I mean, do you have a target in mind? I mean, when you go out, what's your plan?
Just to get money.
Okay. All right. So I just didn't know if you were at that. I mean, because you're selling a lot. I mean, you got a great business going, and I'm just intrigued. I've always liked to understand, you know, is there a strategy when you leave the house? So it's definitely a strategy when you go to a book sale if you're bringing a team.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys are targeting. I mean, there's a strategy, and it sounds like it's pretty well executed.
Definitely.
What else?
There is a strategy. I mean, I bring certain tools with me. I know what store I want to hit, and I kind of know what I want to do. But it's – you got it – like you said, I can see everything. You know, not everything, but what you can see, you can see it. And the more things you can see, the more your options are. So I almost feel like now there isn't a store that I couldn't walk into and make money.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I agree with you. I think and I'm going to make this statement. Tell me if I'm correct. I believe that the art of this business is learning what not to buy. Because I think there's a market for everything. I think everything will sell. That doesn't mean you're going to make money at it, but it will sell. But I think there's an art in learning what not to buy. And the reason not to buy it, it's because it's a hassle, takes more work, has to be prepped more, whatever. Oh, too many other sellers or whatever. It won't sell fast enough. What do you think on that?
Really, the things that I try not to buy are things that are oversaturated and also don't sell very well. Really, with all the data we have, I can almost say for certain I can make a really sure decision of what's good and what's not just by looking at the data.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Cause today I went, as we were getting coordinated for this today, I went to there's a store called Hancock Fabrics. And they, I think they just went bankrupt and they're closing. So, and I saw these big signs in the windows. I'll go check it out. I've never been in it before. And what do you expect it to be? It's a fabric store, right? But I knew they'd sell all the other stuff, right? You know, sewing machines and all that kind of jazz. I'm like, I'll take a look. Well, the books, I mean, first off, they're only down 20% on most things. So it's not enough to make it reasonable. But when you look at the books, the ranks are millions, you know, most of every single book there, because it's probably a pretty thin market looking for a cruel blanket sewn in the 70s, whatever, you know. And so I thought to myself, maybe I'll come back because she's like, oh, it'll get better and we'll do 50% off at some point. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if I'm going to come back, because I think the ranking, while I'm sure there's some jewels in there, I could go to name another store and just blow right through and in an hour, you know, crush. Do you get what I'm saying?
No, for sure. It just, if you have limited time or limited finances, that's definitely going to influence your buying decisions.
So what have you branched out from books, or is that still, I mean, what percentage of your sales would you say are books?
Easily 95% or more.
Okay. So 95. All right. So you're really not running around looking for other things. Do you think that's one of the reasons you're doing so well is because you're so narrow?
No. The reason we're doing so well is because we're operating in three states simultaneously. And we have people sourcing inventory for us 40 hours a week in all three places. And it's not me or my business partner. So it happens regardless of what we do. So like when you see me on Snapchat sourcing inventory, that's supplemental to what our daily operations provide for the company.
Oh, that's cool. So tell me about that. How does that work? So they're out there sourcing. Are they shipping from these other states to you or directly into Amazon?
Directly into Amazon. So there's one location is where my business partner lives now. One is where he used to live, and one is where I live.
Okay. So you can kind of – you have an established system there since you were already there. How do you find the people that work for you?
So for the most part, we've been really lucky to have enough friends and family to help us run this business. And I actually feel really blessed that I'm able to employ people and pay them a good wage. We do have one location is ran entirely by people that we sourced, not friends or family. And honestly, that has been the biggest nightmare. It's actually not a nightmare anymore. It's actually a dream come true now. But at first, it was the biggest headache, hiring people, interviewing people. It's definitely something I could learn a lot about.
Well, what did you learn?
So far.
Well, you know what I mean? Because most people are sitting there saying, oh, wow, this sounds easy. I'm just going to go. And I mean, I can just hire people in another state and they can just do this stuff for me. Oh, awesome. It's easy, right? You're saying it's not so easy.
No. So I started reading. Aside from the whole competition thing, we make them all sign non-compete agreements and non-disclosure contracts. But the hardest thing is just knowing how to interview someone or how to tell who is a good person to interview. And so after I realized that wasn't my strong point, I did a lot of reading about that. And I haven't actually implemented it yet. Thankfully, we actually managed to have a strong team. Pretty solid team so far. But one of the things that I picked up was that you need to develop a system for interviewing people, and you should be asking all your interviewees the exact same questions. And these questions should not necessarily be questions that you're seeking an answer in, a certain answer, but just trying to get them to talk, to be open. Can they hold your attention? Are they going to talk for 5 or 10 minutes, or do they just say, I don't know?
Right.
Basically see
right.
What kind of can they come up with a creative solution. And once you do this, it becomes plain as day who the good employees are and who they aren't, because you're asking them all the exact same questions.
And so you're seeing a trend in the successful profile almost. You almost come up with, oh, here's somebody who, you know, the people who answered the questions in this way have done well for us, right?
Right. So I haven't actually implemented this yet in practice, but retrospectively looking back at who my good hires were, it makes a lot of sense to me, and I will be doing it going forward. It just makes so much sense. When you ask everyone the same question, the differences are going to stand out more, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I understand it completely. The best predictor of future performance is past performance, right? So if you don't hire the bad people that you had before style-wise, they most likely won't do those same things. And so that makes sense. So who's managing these properties? I mean, obviously you're at one and your partner is at one, but you have this other remote site. How does that work?
So for about a year and a half, we managed it remotely, and one of us would fly in every 3 months, just basically touch bases, clean stuff up, reward the employees, make everyone feel appreciated, basically make sure everything's going down properly. I mean, we also have like regular daily communications, of course, and we can control the computer remotely and different stuff. But we finally got one employee that is just amazing, and I call him our mercenary. And we promoted him recently, so he's making a little bit more, but he's manage everything. You know, he understands the value of not bothering me for little stuff. You know, he right. can think creatively and get problems solved. So he's kind of managing it for us. I guess you would say, yeah, he is a manager.
Okay. So do you have warehouses, or are they able to process right out of their home?
So we say we have warehouses, but that's just us being fancy. We actually use storage units and garages. Okay. So I use my three-car garage my business partner, Scott Gall, he uses his three-car garage, and we have a 10x20 storage unit in the third location.
Okay. And so it's not a very pretty business. I mean, let's face it, you buy a book and you process it and you send it in. So it's relatively easy. There's not a lot of cleanup with it, right?
Right.
And the cool thing is you're setting the parameters. So do you supply a phone for them?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And so you have it programmed for your parameters to say if it's – I don't remember. I haven't used one of these things in a long time. Green, buy it. If it's red, don't buy it, right?
For the most part, but you really can't trust that, especially since Amazon's API doesn't allow the scanner to get all the data. And more importantly, mm-hmm. because our business model is FBA, we pretty much almost ignore merchant-fulfilled prices entirely.
Okay.
So they have to be trained to know how to make the decision regardless of the trigger. It's actually more beneficial to program what we don't want into the scanner than what we do want, because I can tell you what I don't want and it can't tell me what I do want. So you have to click through a lot of times to see what the actual FBA offers is before you buy. And we have a flow chart that we provide them with that they could look at to use to make decisions when they're not sure.
So tell me how it works then. So they go to a book sale and, you know, usually when – I haven't been to one in a while, but there's a lot of people. Everybody has a scanner anymore. And you just go and you're piling up your books as fast as you can. You have a little storage area pile where you pile them. And this was the old days. Now I'm dating myself. And then eventually you'd go back to that and you'd look through them real quick again. Now your secondary look, really. Is that still the way it's done?
Oh, yeah. We have a couple tips that we do. One of the things we do is we always employ a shuttler, someone to shuttle the books from the people who are scanning. So for every 2 to 3 scanners, we're going to have at least one person shuttling books. And that means that the scanners can either have a smaller cart or just a small bag, and the shuttle person will come and take the books from you from when your books are full and take them back to the secondary area and review them while waiting to come and take another load from you.
So that's a key person, right? Because they're now catching a second set of eyes is critical. They're catching what the other person didn't catch, right? Oh, you didn't see that this was written in, or you didn't see these pages are torn out, right?
Yeah, correct. Aside from also allowing the scanner to get more books because they don't have to leave the sale floor to drop off the books.
Right, right. And are they keeping it? I mean, you know, I don't know how it used to be a little pushy back in the old days. Are they keeping an eye on their stacks? I mean, because you're talking about buying hundreds and hundreds of books, right?
Oh, yeah. They always have rules. But I just find that as long as you're generally respectful and you treat everyone kind, buy a lot of cookies from the bake sale, they will be flexible with you. They know you're the biggest customer of the night for them. At least I am, usually. And so as long as we keep our area neat, and for the most part, if we pull 1,000 books off the floor, we're probably going to put 50 or less back. So
okay.
It's not that big of a deal. We're not really holding.
You're generally right on it. Okay, so that was tip number one. That's a great tip. Well, there were a couple tips in there. One, be respectful. It should be the first thing. Two, as you say, be kind and buy the cookies and take advantage of their other things. That's where they make their real easy profit too, right? And they feel like they've done part of it. Be respectful of the work area, right? Because they have to clean it up. But I love the runner. Just keeps, as you say, you're keeping your focus people focused, right? I mean, that's really great. And plus, that other person is, again, a secondary look. All right, give us some more tips.
As far as book sales go?
Yep. Yep, this book sale.
So basic tip is obviously you want to arrive early. Pretty early, at least an hour before it opens. And if you've never been to a sale, and this sale, maybe an hour before that, 2 hours early. One thing we like to do is we'll go 6 hours early and we'll just leave lawn chairs in our spots in line with our name on them, or just something that has like a little bit of value, but something you wouldn't be worried that someone would throw it away. If you just put a cardboard box with your name, they're probably going to throw it away. And then when you come back, you have your good spot. It's critical to have your spot in line because some of these spots have maximum occupancy rules. And so what happens is the first 150 people get in, and the 151st person has to wait for one person to come out before they can go in.
And there's nobody going in and buying one book.
No.
You know, it's those first early birds are all professional resellers, right? And so definitely. they're going to be in there for as long as they need to.
Yeah, definitely. Another strategy is sometimes there's boxes of books on the floor under the tables. You may or may not be allowed to go through them. Sometimes you're not supposed to, but people are doing it and they can't stop them. So it's kind of like you can't beat them, join them type thing. Just try to not be messy. Usually I'll keep my eye on the boxes, and if no one's going at them, I will wait until I either see someone going at them or till I'm done doing the books that I want to do, and then we'll start going through the boxes.
Okay.
For generally what we do is for type-ins, when we're scanning books, we're just going to skip them unless you have a feeling about it, unless it's a real specific title. It's hard to describe, but if it comes out at you, type it in. Otherwise, skip it until the most of the rush is over and slows down. Then go through and skip all the barcodes and just do the type-ins.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. So you're looking at a book sale, and you know they advertise they have 20 or 50,000 books, right? That's not unusual, right?
Correct.
And so you've got a team of people there. You're there. Well, somebody goes and sets up the lawn chairs early, but you guys are there an hour or two before it starts. How many hours are you dedicating to that sale if there's 50,000 books?
The larger the team you have, it's always better. Just hire as many of your friends and family as you can to come help you to relieve the load.
No, I meant length of time. I mean, are you there?
We're going to be there
4 hours.
We're going to be there until they're kicking us out, probably.
Oh wait, so you're there for the whole day?
Let's say the last sale I went to, doors opened at like 5 o'clock and they closed at 8, and so we were checking
out. Five a.m.
No, p.m.
5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Okay, so 3 hours.
Sale.
Okay. Oh yeah, right.
In case
and you pay
didn't
a premium,
you got to go to the preview sale, or you're just totally missing everything.
Right. That's where you pay a premium. You have to write a check usually to get into the sale. Correct.
Correct.
Okay. And it's not very much, but it does. Most people don't want to spend it. Right. They're like, oh, I won't do it. But I agree. That's where the premium stuff is, and you will get the most value. So in 3 hours, how many people did you have at that sale?
We had four people scanning and one person shuttling.
Okay, so five people
for
3 hours, plus you were there an hour early or two, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
I myself didn't show up an hour early, but my employees were there waiting for me.
Okay, so how many books do you think you bought that night?
Let's see. Like 25 boxes of books.
Okay. And so in a box, you're probably going to fit 10, maybe 18 books, 20 books?
Yeah, maybe about
20. I mean, that's 500 books, right? So let's do the math. 20 times 25 is 500 books. 500 books in 3 hours, five people.
Right.
But these are books that are profitable generally, right? I'm sure you're wrong sometimes. I'm sure there's a small percentage that you're wrong on. Oh, I bought it because, and then it turns out it isn't, or the ranking was every, you know, whatever.
Right.
Let's just say, what's your average sale?
So I'm actually pretty confident about these numbers. Our average sale is going to be between $10 and $12.
Okay.
Just across the board, 100 orders, 1,000 orders, 1 year, 3 years, whatever. And so a $10 order, for example, pays out about $650.
Net payout. So let's just use that. So let's just say the $10 times 500 books, that's a 5,000 retail belief, and I'm sure it's higher and lower, right?
Right.
I'm sure all that. But, you know, that's a $3,000 profit, or a little bit more than that.
Right.
Now, you got to pay the people and this and that. How many days a week are you hitting a sale like that?
Definitely not every day a week. The things that are happening every day are like thrift stores, yard sales, garage sales. One of the key factors for our success is the geographic location. You can't just decide that you want to do $1 million of books if you don't have access to $1 million in books.
Mm,
so what we've learned is that you need to be in areas that have nice climates that are nice all year round. So they have yard sales, garage sales all year round. Number two, it has to be near colleges because that's where all the books are. And number three, it helps to have a literate population, which the college kind of influences, but separate from the college, if the city, county area itself has a higher literacy percentage, it's going to be there's going to be more books.
Hmm. You guys have really taken a scientific approach to this. I mean, it's very logical what you're describing. Do you think you could, given those parameters, right, that you just described, you could identify pockets in the country where this opportunity – now, maybe somebody's already doing it, so but logically, you could identify those communities and really set up a shop there. Do you feel like you'll grow more?
Definitely. Our biggest holdback is – HR. It's just resource of human resources mm-hmm. and time. So I don't have a ton of time because my wife's at school and I have kids. So now that college started again, there's like 3-4 days out of the week I can barely leave the house unless I take Luna with me. My business partner also has a kid, and so and his wife works full time. So we're really strapped down. And so it's hard for us to go to get a week or two to go train someone even.
Right. And well, I was going to get there. Do you have a formal training program put together yet? Are you that far along or is that on the agenda?
Not really. A funny thing is that we have what we did a few times in an interview. We had a Nintendo set up and we told people this is what you do when you work here, and we turned it on and it was Tetris, and we made them play Tetris, because if you do books, FBA, you know that that's really what you're doing. You're playing Tetris with books. But since then we have developed a more formal procedure. We have a short guidebook. We have a lot of reference material. And in the last 6 months, what we've started doing is something we should have did a long, long time ago that I highly advise everyone is to videotape everything. I used to think that it would be weird to make a training video or how do I do this? And I finally realized that I just need to record myself while I'm actually training my employees. And then there you go. They have a reference video. You know, you don't have to call me. It's in Dropbox. Go check it out.
Right. It's consistent. You know, the best practice I've heard, and I've given this advice to a bunch of people because they're always like, how do I communicate with my VAs or how do I communicate with other people in other places, is a private Facebook group where you can put the videos in there. You keep everything up to date.
Wow.
It's always the most current, and you get to control the access. So if somebody leaves you and, you know, disgruntled or whatever, you just turn off their ability to get in there. And I just think that's genius. It came from somebody. Feel free to steal it. It's just such a nice, convenient way to stay consistent, because I think a lot of it is consistency. I imagine that's a challenge to keep up with your whole group to make sure everybody stays consistent and is doing what you want, because the business is evolving, isn't it? Books are definitely resurging, though. I see a resurgence in books.
Yeah, that is an amazing idea, Stephen. Thank you so much. We're definitely
It wasn't mine. I'll go back and figure out who told me that, and I just thought, oh, my God, it's so genius, because it's such an easy way to communicate, and you know who's in there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
One place all your records and documents are in, and you don't have to share it. It's in there, and that you can store all the files and videos, now that you can especially do videos. I love the idea of Periscope, Snapchat. Now, Gary Baird is using Snapchat for his – he calls them runners. And so the runner would be, okay, we're buying these candy bars from Target. I'll make it up. And here's your sheet. Go to these 6 targets and this and that. And he said what happens is Snapchat allows for a really instant conversation. And when somebody's in a store, they'll snap out to everybody, hey, also pick up this. And that communication really, really works really well. And I think that's really kind of the cool thing about the business now is none of that existed. I mean, think back as we started the conversation. Oh. We were talking about using PDAs.
Yeah.
Right?
Or telephones.
And Yeah. I mean, just think about where you're at. Yeah, you're calling your brother and he was checking on dial-up. You know, it's really come a long way. And if you take advantage of it, you could be very efficient. So you could see yourself expanding. Do you think let me ask this question, because I think this is a logical question. So you're selling thousands and thousands of books a year. What percentage of them are coming from book sales as opposed to thrift stores, as opposed to garage sales? And, I mean, I'm sure there's other places too.
I would say 25 to like 25% probably is book sales. And that's just –
that's so much lower than I thought it would be.
I don't know. I could be wrong on that. I'm just estimating it. I would say it's no more than 50 and between probably 25 and 50. But the reason is just because they're far and few in between. We do fly to some book sales, ones that we have experience in, and we know that they're extremely profitable. But we can't just – we can't just fly to all kinds of them. It's really expensive if we're not certain. And so we have ones that we regularly hit every year, but it's not, you know, we're not doing it as much as we could, you know. If we drove, you know, an extra 100 miles in our radius that we're willing to drive, we could double the amount of sales we went to.
Well, it just interests me because then that means where I was going with my conclusion was is that and I was thinking it was going to be, you know, 40-50% being a book sale, because that's – you can go in and you could pound it out, right? You can just pound out and just get huge volume. But the rest of it, you really are hustling for. You really have to have people who are going to hustle, because, you know, if they can get, you know, 3 books on average at a yard sale, you got to cover a lot of ground to get a lot of books, right?
Yeah. So we're not just going out blind on garage sales. Really, we use a lot of – tools on the internet to help us. We use Craigslist notification stuff on the phone to notify us of, say, things in the estate sale category that say books, and those are generally going to be more worthwhile than just a yard sale that says they have books. And
right.
We map them out, but we don't just go to them. We call them before we go to them and say, hey, I saw you had books. Do you have 3 books, or do you have, you know, 10 boxes of books? And we try to avoid wasting our time as much as possible.
Okay. All right. So there is some thought put into that too. And that's part of that training, really. I think that is. Have you learned anything from your employees? Have they been able to give back and say, this works?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I've learned so much stuff there. I have, like, off the top of the head, there's probably at least 3 things I could think of, but there's been more for sure. One thing was my dad used to work for me when he had some spare time, and I have the Zebra printers for printing when we used to self-fulfill books for printing USPS labels. And we ran out of thermal rolls, but we had fan fold rolls, and I was taking them and rolling them up onto the old roll and putting them in the printer. And the only reason I had the fan fold ones is because I ordered the wrong ones from UPS. And my dad's like, why are you doing that? And he shows me that you can feed the labels through the back. And I was like, oh, you know how many hours I've sat here rolling labels up? Like,
it's like, duh, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. It is. It's a duh moment, though, because we've all done it.
And then here's another really duh moment. And I attribute this to just thinking that you know everything. So you know how sometimes when you print FBA labels, they print really in pretty much in the right order. Sometimes they're like haphazard, whatever. Sometimes you have trouble finding the book or the sticker or whatever. And for years and years, we never knew that you could do a control F and find in the PDF of the labels to find the book title.
That's funny. Yeah. No, I get it.
Oh, my God. So then you could just grab a book and then you can call it out and say, hey, the 4-hour work week. And then they can tell you, oh, it's on the 3rd page, middle column, 3rd down. And then you find that. And then, of course, that's where you go off on the rest of the books are right there, too. So.
Well, you're taking me a place where I really want to go, because this is exactly the place that people listening to this are saying, right? They should be thinking this way. They're saying, man, I've got those same things in my business, these pinch points, these pains in my butt. Let me tell you, somebody has figured it out. You have to reach out to other sellers. That's why talking to other people – Greg Murphy, who we talked about offline earlier, is brilliant. I mean, he's an economist, but he's smart. He's just the nicest guy. But he has said – he's got a staff about the size of yours. He's like, Steve, I can't have these conversations with my employees. They're just trying to make it through today. But I have big things I need to talk about, and that's why I need to get talking with other sellers at the same level, because I have found that they had the same issue and they figured it out. That took the learning curve down, or together we figured it out, you know?
Right.
And I think that's just so critical to get past that comfort level of, oh, he's going to see my business. He's going to understand. Let me tell you, we're selling stuff.
Yeah.
There it is. You buy something low and you sell it high. There's the secret. That's it. There's no more secret than that. Yeah, there's a technique and there's tricks and tips and stuff like that. But let's be realistic, right?
Right. Isn't that an amazing thing, though, that the internet provided us with? Because, you know, I know sellers locally, and I'm not going to say that we're friends. We're not enemies. I'm enemies with some of them. I would say they're very rude. But others, you know, have kids and whatever. We're acquaintances, but I definitely can't talk shop with them. I would never, you know. I think half of my local competition doesn't even sell FBA. And so, you know, I'm very careful. You know, I don't put my name on my FBA boxes. I don't allow my employees to scout with FBA boxes in the car, all kinds of stuff.
Well, and I think that you're being safe and secure in that way. But the value from the communities that we're in, as you're saying, the internet allows us to have this.
Definitely.
You know, we're having a conversation. I had a conversation the other day and with a gentleman who's in Thailand, you know, and we're able to talk business. And it's just we're so fortunate, and you really have to take advantage. I do appreciate the way, though, that you're still strategically approaching your business. You're looking at every touch point and trying to figure out the most efficient way. And I think hopefully you got one on that using Facebook groups, private groups, because I'm telling you, the minute the person told me that, I was like, oh my God, the lights went on, and I'm like, whoa, the clouds opened up, and I could see the value in it. And that's what you got to do. I mean, you're having incredible success, and what I appreciate, again, is the way you're approaching your business. I really do. I see the methodical approach, the way you're looking at every touch point. You're putting thought to it, saying, I can improve the process and that kind of thing. What would you say is your greatest strength? Would that be it, your ability to look at things like that?
No, besides the technology is, like you were saying, the ability to streamline everything, to make everything efficient. From a very early time, you know, I started streamlining everything, whether it was actually an employee helped me streamline this when I used to self-fulfill orders and I had a bazillion hundreds of orders a day. I learned that you just throw the book in the envelope, write the first name and last initial, then do the next one, then stack them all up, then weigh them all, then seal them all up, then print postage. So Henry Ford model on everything as much as possible. And so a lot of people say, oh, you just want to touch it once. I want to touch a book once. But to me, that's very inefficient. We make books in shipments of like 300 to 500 in stacks on long tables. And so it's condition the books into stacks, scan the books, list the books, sticker the books, box the books. Each is its own process. And I'm fairly certain that the efficiency of that is what allows us to process such a large number of books for a low cost. And that's a huge advantage for us.
It is a smart advantage. So that is a big strength. I love it. I don't want to go to weakness because I don't think it really matters. I love the fact that you're doing this the right way. Tell me technology-wise. Now, you mentioned A-Seller Tool and FBA Scan, and I'm going to put that in there. Any other tools that you're using that you think people really need to take advantage?
There is actually a lot of tools. We use Camel a lot. We do a lot of Amazon-to-Amazon arbitrage buying books, so we use Zen arbitrage software for that. We also use our own sales as references for that.
Well, your own sales, meaning that you sold this book for $38. If you see it again, you're buying it.
Well, I showed it on Snapchat the other day. I sold a book, and the payout was, let's say, $48 or whatever, meaning I sold it for like 56 or something. I don't know. And then when I go in, so I'll look at all the high dollar sales. Then when I go and investigate the sale, I'll look, oh, wow, we sold a very good for 55, but you can buy very goods right now for $6. You know,
yeah. So that's what Caleb Ross said, the same thing.
Five or 10 copies.
Caleb Ross said the same thing. He said sometimes I'm standing there in the book sale and buying them right then and there because I can see that I can buy six more and then they show up. That's just smart.
Exactly.
Very smart.
What else? Jungle Scout is huge. We just started using that a few months ago for retail arbitrage. So, having a rank and knowing what a rank means and seeing the sales rank chart on Camel is one thing. But if you're wondering, can I buy 10 or 20 of these toys or of this pair of shoes, and you're unsure, and you go and Jungle Scout says that in the last 30 days, 1,200 pairs of this Nike shoe have sold, then you know you can buy 10 or 20 pairs because you know, the sales volume is there to support your purchase.
Great.
That's huge. That's one of those things that it's like, if you have been selling stuff for like your whole life and you're like 60 now and you used to have brick and mortar stores or whatever, like you have to be just literally crapping your pants at how easy it is now for everybody with all the data that they have.
Well, and you got to take the data with a grain of salt. Jungle Scout's not perfect. The data is reasonably accurate, right?
Right.
I mean, there are some anomalies. You just have to know when there's – just like your book scanner. There are things that throw it off, and you just got to know it. You get a feeling for, after you use it a little bit, you do get a feeling for it. And you say, well, yeah, that says that, but that's not what it means. That's just weird, that one.
Yeah, exactly.
But generally speaking, it's relatively accurate.
Right.
Very cool. Let me ask you this. How about – you had mentioned that you read a lot. And I love that you're reading those short little ebooks because it keeps you sharper. I like that, and I think that's smart. What else are you reading or listening to that you think our listeners would benefit from?
I listen to Gary Vaynerchuk. I follow Gary Vee, pretty much everything he does. I read just general business books as much as possible. It's nothing too specific. They're all probably in the top 500 in the business category in Amazon. Read The Art of War if you haven't read that.
Mm. Any podcasts?
I listen to Scott Volker's Amazing Seller podcast.
Absolutely great.
But I kind of backed off for a while. There's just so much content to consume that I feel like I should hire a VA to consume it all for me and summarize it because I get information paralysis and then I can't get my life done. So I listen to this coffee podcast that's really great called Cat and Cloud Coffee. That's pretty good. If you're into coffee, those guys are my bros. I learned everything I know about coffee from them.
All right, cool. I saw that mentioned on your blog, and I was like, I don't know those guys. Let me ask you a question because this is interesting to me. Gary Vaynerchuk. Now he's older than you. He's 40 years old, and you're a lot younger. What's attractive about him and your generation? Because I notice it. I mean, do you notice your hustling friends?
Yeah.
Are into him?
Some people. I don't have a. A lot of my friends are skateboarders and people that live like check to check. But online, the people that I've been starting to network with, yes. And my take on it is he comes off as really real. And I can tell that the hustle in him is real. I really respect what he did as a youngster for his family's business. He's family oriented. And I also respect him even more for being, 10 years older than me. But being 10 years ahead of me as far as this technology stuff is concerned, if it wasn't for Gary Vee, I definitely wouldn't have Snapchat or be on it or Periscope. And I never would have met Steve Rakin. I probably wouldn't have my stuff set up how I have it now. So thanks to Gary Vee for everything.
That's really well said. Now, it's interesting because I noticed this pattern, and I've been trying to get to find why, and I think you did a good job explaining. All right. Well, the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward and get unstuck, right? So they're selling $20,000 or $30,000 a month, and it's still not enough to really get that great living yet. And there is a point, a pivot point, a tipping point, as Malcolm Gladwell will call it. What tip or trick could you give that would help people get past that hurdle? Because you exceeded that hurdle quite a bit.
The main first basic tip is just you got to be selling FBA. You should be selling everything FBA. Unless it's a weight issue or something, you should be selling it FBA. That's just where all the customers are. I once read a statistic that said 90% of Amazon customers have never purchased anything that wasn't fulfilled by Amazon. So you have to position your products properly to sell, and you want to position them on FBA. Secondly, you want to sell for the FBA price. And what I mean by that is when you get your item there, don't worry about the merchant fulfilled sellers. That's not your competition. Remember that your buyer is an FBA buyer. They want it in 2 to 3 days, and they've been trained very well by Amazon to not have to deal with buyer's remorse. And that's why we're making so much money selling FBA, is because these customers have been trained to love that logo. So use your own sales as examples. So when you sell something, Don't just think I know in books you kind of get trained to think that, oh, that's a one-off item. You got it. You can't go and get it again. But that's not true, especially when you sell a disproportionate price FBA to the merchant fulfilled. Look at your sales that are over 25 bucks every day and see, can you buy that book merchant fulfilled and sell it FBA just like you just did? Do a Google search or an at all book search or whatever. Try and find if you can get that book anywhere else. Or this also applies to online arbitrage and retail arbitrage, you know. Just trying to repeat your sales, you know. Go and look at your old sales once in a while and say, oh, hey, I remember that. That was a great item that I got at Walmart. I wonder if they have it now. And you might find out that 6 months later it's in stock again. And then
great advice. That's great advice. I love it. I love what you're saying. 90% sell FBA. If you're merchant fulfilling, you know, I understand you don't want to pay the fees and blah, 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 but you're missing the audience.
Yeah,
I mean, you really are missing the audience.
Yeah, you're not only missing the audience, you're missing the money, because 90% of your FBA sales, as long as you compare against FBA price, are going to profit you more than they would have merchant fulfilled. So the fact that you're scared to pay those extra fees is stopping you from making more money and doing less work. FBA is just amazing. I know, I'm sorry, Greg, to say this. Greg Murphy has a video that he did that said FBA sucks, and I'm the exact opposite. FBA doesn't suck. FBA is amazing. FBA has provided me with the freedom to have the lifestyle that I want and to be able to grow my business. Like, I used to have 7,000 books merchant fulfilled in my bedroom in boxes and stacks, and that sucked. FBA doesn't suck.
Well, you know, in fairness, both model. I think that's the cool part about this business is both models are incredibly successful.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's neat. I really think that that's what makes this just such an incredible world. As Gary Vee would say, we're in the, you know, we're an industrial revolution of our times right now.
Yes.
I mean, this is it. There is a change afoot, and both models work. But they have to be run completely different, and Greg's operation is completely different than yours.
I need to sit down with Greg. He reached out to me, or actually I reached out to him, and he probably got tired of me bugging him, and he gave me his phone number. I still haven't called him, but I would like to talk to him in depth, because I'm sure we could both benefit from each other's knowledge.
Absolutely.
I actually have a couple more tips if you want.
Go ahead.
Me to drop.
Yeah, no, I do.
One is if you do grocery – well, if you don't do grocery, you should, because it's just ridiculous that you could just walk into any grocery store and make money. if you don't like grocery shopping before, you're going to love it now. But the thing is, if you combine grocery retail arbitrage with extreme couponing methodology, you can make some serious bucks. So you should follow the crazy coupon lady. She's pretty much the authority on coupons. And then when you find items, like say your sales flyer comes at your house and you're like, oh, wow, I can bundle that Captain Crunch for a 4-pack and make, you know, sell it for $25 and I'm getting it for $1.50 a box. Go look on eBay and see if there's any Captain Crunch coupons and buy them. And you got to get them quick so they arrive before the weekly sale's over. Then you're going to be getting that Captain Crunch for 75 cents a box. And you can make some serious money if you combine extreme couponing with grocery.
That's a great tip.
One more last final tip that I have, and this goes out to my booksellers. Sell book sets without the box. So you have 50 Shades of Grey trilogy. You have Harry Potter set. You have the Outsiders set, whatever. All kinds of book sets that come in sets. If you have the books to make that set, sell it as a set, but just make sure in the note you put books only, no slipcase, and then list it as good. And don't send a hodgepodge set, you know, three books from a different set. Make sure they match each other. Not necessarily that they have to match the exact listing. The customer doesn't care. But
well, I think your point is that a collector would care, right? They need the slipcase. They need it in that pristine. But you're selling it to a reader
exactly.
Who's looking for them.
Essentially, a lot of booksellers overlook this, but essentially what you're doing is bundling books.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though – so like take that Harry Potter book, for example. We can't sell it singly because it goes for almost a loss, like 349 or something like that. But if there's seven books in the Harry Potter set, this person's going to have to pay like $23 to get that set, buying them individually. So you can bundle them together and sell it for $19.99. This is just all rough numbers I'm making up. And you can profit. And so what we have is we have all kinds of barcodes for sets on the wall in our sorting tables, and we save the books up till we make sets, and then we pallet wrap the set together, and then we scan that barcode on the wall that represents that set when we're listing them.
So that's a pro tip right there. So you're seeing this is I'll make an assumption here. Your team knows when they see a Harry Potter book at a yard sale, at a thrift store, or whatever, and it's in good condition, buy it.
Oh yeah,
because you're gonna there's a whole series of sets that you just know that you're going to buy, American Girl doll, whatever. You're going to buy those books and just keep piling them up, and eventually you'll end up with a set. We used to do that with old days with Hardy Boys books, right? You used to buy all the Hardy Boys books for a quarter, and eventually you get all, you know, however many there are, and you'd come up with a whole full set and sell it for a ton of money. That's a great tip.
That's funny that you say that, because we sell Nancy Drew and Hardy Boy books. I'm actually looking at the Harry Potter set right now. I just pulled it up on Amazon, and I wanted to do this just to let the listeners know. The hardback is 1 through 7 is 308 in books. The paperback is 16,549. Now check out these prices. This is pretty amazing. So Harry Potter, one set. I guess they're just two different sets, so – the paperback one set is merchant fulfilled, going for $47.
And these are books that you can find at 50 cents at a yard sale or a dollar at a book sale.
All day long. You can't help but find these books. So you get seven of them for, even if you pay a dollar each, which I'm telling you, you could leave your house right now and go find this whole set probably three times in any city in America for $7. You're going to have, you know, a $50 revenue item on your hand. And most booksellers are just scanning a single book and then they just throw it to the side, you know? So just learn to recognize that there is value in bundling books. And even if it's not a set to sell on Amazon, you know, maybe it's 10 mystery novels or 10 Wild West novels or whatever, and they're worthless individually. But if you bundle them together, you can dump them on eBay and make a good profit.
Yeah, people absolutely look for themes on those books. Even on eBay, some of them are colors. People have sold bundles of colors because people use them as decorations and things. It's a really interesting – I love the idea, though, about using the bundle concept professionally, right? Just always buy these books, team. Always buy these books.
Always.
We will sell them eventually, and I love the idea of having the labels on the wall. That's a pro tip. Dude, you lived up to the hype from Michael. I'm going to send him a note just to let him know that I did, because, again, he recognized it too. He recognized the hustle, and I think that that's what a lot of us appreciate, is the hustle, because that's fun. I could tell you still enjoy it. This isn't a job for you yet, is it?
No, not really. I love scouting inventory, so – I take a scanner everywhere I go. I have one in my glove box of every car. If I get 20, 30 minutes, I'm going to be scanning something. And I always joke about it because I pay myself a salary and I don't get paid more for the more I work. So really, I should be focusing on growth. So maybe I could give myself a raise or a bonus or something. But I just can't stop hustling. I love it.
You love it. Oh, it's apparent and it's infectious. Best way to get in touch with you.
You can send me an email at reezyresells@gmail.com.
And I'll have a link for that.
Awesome.
At gmail.com. And you have a Facebook group out there, right?
Yeah. Let me see what the actual exact
title is.
Well,
I'll put the link in it there. I'll put the link in it for you.
Cool.
It's Reezy Resells. And so, you know, I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate the infection. And I'm telling you, people are noticing it because you could see the genuine hustle. And I think people really love that. Man, I wish you nothing but success. A great 2016. You do need to reach out to Greg Murphy. He's a genius, and he's the real deal. Just a great guy, great dad. And I wish you nothing but success, man.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Stephen.
Hey, thank you. Take care.
You too.
All right. I think this was a great interview again. What a great perspective, you know. I mean, think about, again, three locations scaling up a book business. Very transferable. I gave him a tip. You heard about the Facebook group, and I got that from somebody else. And I just think it's so smart. The technology today you need to take advantage of. Reduce what you're doing by taking advantage of that, those resources. And I just think it's so smart. I hope you enjoyed this. Check us out, ecommercemomentum.com. Lots of cool things going on out there. We've got a great set of interviews next week. I hope you enjoy it, and just take care. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.